World Health Organization Infection Control Webinar Series. Epidemiology and Prevention of Hospital-Acquired Ventilator-Associated Pneumonia. Presented on 13 July 2010 by Dr. Philippe Eggemann, Lausanne, Switzerland. World Health Organization, First Global Patient Safety Challenge. Clean care is safer care.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Philippe Eggemann, and I'm both ID and ICU physician in an adult ICU in Lausanne, Switzerland. Welcome to the hospital here, the world of nosocomial infection. We are speaking from nosocomial infection because you may know that in the ICU we have a very high number of nosocomial infection, and you can see here from this large international survey that almost in all countries where it has been looked for, these different ICU report about 20% of nosocomially acquired infection. We know that at least from these large ICU survey performed about 20 years ago that we have one-third of the patients staying in the ICU who will develop an nosocomial infection. And you can see here that about half of these nosocomial infection will be pneumonia. And that it is important to realize that among risk factors predisposing poor patients to these nosocomial infection, we have here mechanical ventilation that are responsible for these infection. And this has been recently confirmed by the EPIC-2 studies, in some of you may have been participated, in which it has been shown that you may see more than half of the infection of these patients were from the respiratory tract. And back to the epidemiology of VAP, among this large international survey, you see that more than 20% of them developed a pneumonia while on mechanical ventilation. And these figures here coming from the Canadian database are showing that the daily risk of acquiring a ventilator-associated pneumonia may be maximal at day 5 and may slowly decrease during the period of mechanical ventilation after this peak at day 5. However, this is an epidemiological view, and I prefer much more this view from a French study showing that whenever the underlying disease you have, you see that with time, if you are still on mechanical ventilation, you have a progressive increase of the proportion of patients developing a ventilator-associated pneumonia, and that after 3 to 4 weeks, more than 3/4 of the patients will have developed a ventilator-associated pneumonia. From this other important large survey here for more than 300 ICU, you see that we have to distinguish between early onset ventilator-associated pneumonia, which developed during the 5 first days of mechanical ventilation, with the late onset pneumonia, which are a little bit less frequent, developing after 5 days, and this may have important impact regarding to the epidemiology of these infections. Risk factor for death among these ventilator-associated pneumonia are the severity of the disease. You may see here that high SAPS 2 score predict a mortality, and also the underlying disease or the way the patient present with septic shock, for example. From these other large survey on patients having heart surgery, you see that the proportion of patients developing VAP is not so frequent. Here you have the risk factors for developing a VAP, which mean that age, number of transfused blood, reintubation, a large series of risk factors. And among these patients having major heart surgery, you see that the mortality of patients developing VAP was higher than those who did not develop such nosocomial infection. When we have a look on our own data here in Cheuve, in Lausanne, you see that among four-year survey, we have also patient developing VAP, and you have here among diagnoses you are not able to read because it's too early, is to see you the underlying disease and the mortality, the ICU and the hospital-associated mortality. And here for VAP, we have a 20% hospital mortality. And if I compared here ventilator-associated pneumonia with hospital-acquired pneumonia, so also nosocomial pneumonia but not strictly related to mechanical ventilation, you may see that in the ICU we have a little bit more non-ventilator-associated pneumonia, but you see with a little higher mortality rate. So meaning that both types of infection are important and both types of infection are associated with significant morbidity and probably also significant mortality. It is important because we have much more data and much more epidemiological data regarding ventilator-associated pneumonia compared to hospital-acquired pneumonia, but I will mix the two entities regarding the diagnosis, the treatment, and also the prevention. So the impact of these ventilator-associated pneumonia is important because, unfortunately, most of these patients will die. Fortunately, not all will die directly from these pneumonia, but a certain proportion of them, probably about 10%, will die directly from having acquired these nosocomial infection. It prolongs the length of stay, and also it increases the cost, which is a major problem in many hospitals. Regarding the pathophysiology of these infections, and you can see that all is going here in the oropharynx because these patients are intubated with an endotracheal tube here, and this endotracheal tube impairs the shallowing of the secretion, and here coming from the pharynx, the secretion are accumulating here above the cuff of the tracheal sound, and you see that it's not completely hermetic, and you have continuous microaspiration here of the fluid containing a lot of bacteria among the cuff, and this progressively will contaminate the bronchial tree, and an infection will develop as a consequence of that. The diagnosis of pneumonia is something which is relatively difficult, and there is a lot of literature on this, and I will only summarize many controversies in the literature with one slide. We need to rely on clinical suspicion, and clinical suspicion of ventilator-associated pneumonia relies on clinical symptoms, which is a progressing or new radiological infiltrates, and associated with clinical signs suspect of infection, such as fever, low fever, white blood cells counts, and purulent sputum. But this required a microbiological confirmation because for mechanically ventilated patients, we know that only half of those with the clinical suspicions will, at the end, have a microbiologically confirmed infection. And so regarding the microbiological confirmation, there is also here a huge amount of literature, and experts are still debating about the best technique and try to compare bronchoalveolar lavage, protected brush specimen with endotracheal aspirates. And at the end, the diagnosis for an hospital-acquired pneumonia not related to mechanical ventilation should be the same, so this is also why I put these two entities together. Recently, a comparison appeared on the large review of the literature, and you have here the different sensitivity or specificity of these three techniques, and you see that the specificity of endotracheal aspirates is not very high compared to protected brush specimen or bronchoalveolar lavage, and this is due to a contamination of the fluid aspirated by the oral secretion. And with distal sampling, such as protected brush specimen or bronchoalveolar lavage, you increase the specificity of having really microorganisms that are coming from the lung where you will have, where you have the infection. Canadian investigators have tried to compare both endotracheal aspirates with bronchoalveolar lavage, and you see that these pivotal studies showed that these investigators were not able to see any difference in terms of of outcome of these patients comparing these two techniques. This is important because the impacts on mechanical ventilation and on previous antibiotic therapy has an important influence of the etiological agent that are responsible for this infection. And here in this French investigation, which is cited since more than 15 years now, you see that for patients with less than 7 days of mechanical ventilation and without antibiotic exposure, you see that the large majority of patients developing a pneumonia, the pneumonia will be due to the own flora of the patient that has been microaspirated from the oral cavity to the bronchial tree. So regarding gram-negative, the majority are Haemophilus influenzae or methicillin-sensitive Staphylococcus aureus for gram-positive cocci or Streptococcus pneumoniae. For patients with less than 7 days of mechanical ventilation, but previously exposed to antibiotics, such as those hospitalized and put on mechanical ventilation for an infection, for example, you see that the proportion of microorganisms that you may have in the hospital, that you may have acquired in the hospital, such as MRSA or Pseudomonas or Acinetobacter, these proportions increase. And if you increase the duration of mechanical ventilation, but without exposure to antibiotics, you see that you still have a majority of microorganisms that are probably from the own flora of the patient. And you see that it's only when you expose this patient to antibiotics that you increase probably the selective pressure and that it will result on a higher proportion of hospital-acquired flora, on true nosocomial flora, and this is in this subset of patients that we will see pneumonia with microorganisms with progressive resistance to antibiotics. And here again, the risk factors for acquiring a pneumonia due to a potentially resistant microorganism is mechanical ventilation for more than 7 days, is exposure to antibiotics, and you see that in that PRESIS study, they were able to show that exposure to broad-spectrum antibiotics will further increase the risk of developing infection to potentially resistant microorganisms. And this has a pivotal importance because in all these five studies, these investigators were able to show that if you compare the mortality of patients developing a ventilator-associated pneumonia, a patient being on antibiotic that are not able to fight the microorganism responsible for this infection, the mortality will be much higher than if you compare with patients in the same condition but receiving appropriate antibiotic therapy, meaning antibiotics correctly targeted against the microorganism responsible for the infection. And resulting from all this literature from 10 years ago, the American Society of Infectious Disease and the American Thoracic Society puts together guidelines for the management of patients developing hospital-acquired or ventilator-associated pneumonia. And to summary a lot of literature, it's relatively easy. The recommendation is to start early appropriate broad-spectrum antibiotics in order to be sure to cover all the possibility of the nosocomial flora. So to summarize, broad-spectrum, and you see that it's a recommendation based on many, many, many references. Actually, we have a large possibility to use recently developed antibiotics, and you see that if you use piperazole, for example, if you use the advanced generation cephalosporins or carbapenems or the new tetracycline, we have antibiotics with very, very, very broad spectrum, including MRSA for some recently released antibiotics. So it actually could not be an important problem to choose very broad spectrum antibiotics to be sure that we will be able to respect the guidelines to cover adequately all potentially microorganisms responsible for the infection. However, this is part of the catastrophic epidemiological situation we are facing for since many years, because we are in this situation. When we have an infection in a patient, we give them antibiotics. And to follow guidelines and to be sure that the patient will be effectively cured, we give antibiotics, but we are realizing pressure to develop resistance. And when we have antibiotic resistance microorganisms, we should prescribe broad spectrum antibiotics, and we prescribe combination of antibiotics in many hospitals in many countries. This increases the pressure for development of further antibiotic resistant microorganisms. This increases the proportion of initial inadequate antibiotic coverage, and this has been repeatedly shown to be responsible for increased mortality, bacteremia, in peritonitis, and in pneumonia. And we are actually in a true vicious cycle for which we have no real good possibility to escape. And this is why we should put all our efforts, all attention to try to prevent nosocomial infection, and especially today to try to prevent ventilator-associated pneumonia. Here are summarized a lot of measures that have been proved to be really efficacious against the development of ventilator-associated pneumonia. Fortunately, we cannot read all these different items, and I think that we will go through what should be the prevention of any nosocomial infection. For me, it should be integrated into a strategy to prevent infection. Here, ventilator-associated pneumonia. First, we should take general measures. We should put effort to control antibiotic use. We should take specific measures, and we will speak from recent development at the end. Surveillance. It's essential to survey nosocomial infection to try to understand the mechanisms, to try to understand the epidemiology in your wards before starting any intervention. Otherwise, your intervention may not succeed. Isolation precaution. Isolation precaution, infection control, infection hygiene is the essential step to prevent infection. And it's important to realize that it's not important to provide isolation. It's important to prevent the transmission of microorganisms, and in the hospital actually it's our hands that are the principal vector of transmission of microorganisms. And we should absolutely prevent transmission of microorganisms from one patient to another, or from one patient to the environment and to further patients. And to do that, we have the tools that are provided and summarized by the standard precaution: hand hygiene, gowns, masks, brills, and protection, personal protection. And it's and we have also the transmission-based precaution, which should be taken for exception. And here again, contact, droplets, air, and special protection should be installed only because they should prevent the transmission of microorganisms. I will now speak a little bit about antibiotic control. Guidelines for antibiotics, we have guidelines in almost all hospitals. Many societies have proven that guidelines are useful. Regarding ventilator-associated pneumonia, we have several pivotal studies in this field. The first one is these from the French investigators here, showing that If you have a patient suspect of ventilator associated pneumonia, if you apply invasive strategy, meaning to try to confirm the suspicion of pneumonia with bronchoalveolar lavage, and if you compare with the clinical strategy, which is based only on the endotracheal aspirate, in this study, these authors were able to show that the proportion of inadequate initial treatment was much more higher in the clinical strategy. In the invasive strategy based on the results of bronchoalveolar lavage, they were able to really target more efficiently the patient with an infection. And you see that, importantly, the number of days without antibiotics were much higher in the invasive strategy patients. So I think that it's important to try to document really the infection that patient may have. And you see in this study performed 10 years ago that all class and all individual different antibiotic agents were used less frequently in patients who were included in the invasive strategy. And this group further published another important study showing that for patients with ventilator-associated pneumonia, an 8-day antibiotic treatment was as efficient as a 15-day antibiotic regimen. And this is why actually most experts and most guidelines recommend to treat ventilator-associated pneumonia for 8 days. It should be sufficient. Unfortunately, in the clinical practice, we see in many, many hospitals that we are not able to respect these 8-day target for antibiotic treatment of ventilator-associated pneumonia, and this may, and we prolong antibiotic until 2 weeks and sometimes more, and this is responsible for this vicious circle with progressive selective pressure of antibiotics. In this context, it has been recently shown by this multi-center study that patients with a ventilator-associated pneumonia, 100 patients with ventilator-associated pneumonia, and in this study we compare two strategies. In one strategy, we try to add information on the regression of the inflammation state of the patient by showing the procalcitonin, and when the clinical condition of the patient has improved, and this was confirmed by the decreasing procalcitonin level, we were able to stop the antibiotics much more early than patients in the control group. And you can see that in the control group, the mean antibiotic duration was 15 days, and that's by using the procalcitonin strategy, we were able to decrease the duration of the treatment of 1/3, and that with 10 days of antibiotics, we are relatively close to the guidelines and to what the French investigators have shown. So it's as this biological marker was able to comfort us in our decision to stop antibiotics for patients who were improving clinically. And this is important because it's this study confirmed what has recently been shown in at least 3 other studies showing that procalcitonin-based strategy was able to reduce the duration of the antibiotic treatment. It was the case in a series of patients in Geneva where they were able for these patients, and the majority of these patients had pulmonary sepsis, to decrease the duration of antibiotics. And recently, early in the year, a French group in a very large study were able to show that in these patients, and half of them had a pulmonary sepsis, they were also able to significantly decrease the duration of antibiotic for patients in the ICU with respiratory infection. So very important, because by using this PCT-based de-escalation strategy, we may hope that we will progressively decrease the selective pressure on antibiotic and the selective pressure for resistance. Regarding antibiotic control, it's also important to speak from selective digestive decontamination. What is selective digestive decontamination? SDD is targeted at prevention of secondary colonization with potential pathogen. And we hope that with SDD we will be able to prevent ventilator-associated pneumonia and bloodstream infection by decreasing both aspiration and translocation of microorganisms colonizing the patient. So SDD is a combination of enteral topical non-absorbable antibiotics that should be put here at the oropharynx, in some studies also put in the stomach, here through the nasogastric tube, to decrease the colonization with microorganisms, but with non-absorbable antibiotics. In many, many studies, it's combined with the short-term parenteral antibiotics to decrease the amount of microorganisms that have been made bronchoaspirated during the intubation procedures. In all studies, and this should be emphasized absolutely, in all SDD studies, hand hygiene was also reinforced. And fourth, it's important to have surveillance culture to be sure that it will not favor the development of other resistant microorganisms. Over the last 25 years, SDD has been studied a lot. And despite tens of trials, editorials, meta-analyses, these remain highly controversial among specialists. Why? And I will try to explain you why it remains so controversial. And as a consequence of these controversies, you see from this British survey here that SDD is not used in 95% of ICU physician or of ICU units, and the reason for not using is that despite literature, half of these doctors do not believe that it works, say that there is not enough evidence. An important proportion of these doctors are worried about the antibiotic resistance and so on. Evidence came from at least 15 meta-analyses over the last 15 years, showing in summary that SDD with full regimen means SDD with systemic antibiotics for 3 to 4 days are able to decrease pneumonia, to decrease bacteremia, and in some instance to decrease the mortality of the patient. However, it has been suggested that it may be true only for some subset of surgical patients. And effectively, if you look at these individual SDD trials, it's only in a minority of these studies that these authors were able to show that SDD decreased the mortality of patients. The concept has been further developed, and to go through selective oral decontamination, SOD, is that antibiotics are applied only topically without the component of parenteral antibiotics. And this, unfortunately, has been shown that it may work, but less effectively than the full SDD regimen. So strong evidence for SDD, strong believers. And recently a Dutch study appears, very large study, including almost all major ICU in the Netherlands, showing that the overall ICU mortality was decreased by both SDD and SOD. So a very important study suggesting that we should go and we should perform selective digestive decontamination or oral decontamination to all ICU patients. Unfortunately, the things are not so simple as they appeared, and SDD actually may promote resistance. We are still complex human beings, and we are complex bacterial ecosystem. And you should realize that we have more cells on the skin and on the bowel than cells on our body. And when we expose this complex system to antibiotics, it's not difficult to imagine that these will have an impact, an important impact. And it's only recently that it has been shown that we may have some important influence between the bacteria we have in our body and our immunity. And so it's important because STD promotes resistance, and this has been shown in almost all STD studies. STD may promote the selection of resistant microorganisms responsible for secondary infection also in many STD studies. So STD promotes resistance, and this is still a problem. It's only in the country with very low resistant microorganisms that STD works. Here you see that in the Netherlands they have very low proportion of ESBL, for example. They again have very low proportion of methicillin resistant Staphylococcus aureus, and this may be very important because it has been shown that in country with more resistant organism, STD actually may promote this resistance. And even in the Netherlands, STD has an ecological impact. And the authors that have published this wonderful study published in the New England with the positive impact on mortality of STD also shown that after they stop the STD period in these 13 ICU, they observe both in rectal samples and in respiratory samples a rebound effect with the proportion of resistant strains that were colonizing the patient. So effectively, I think that STD is still a matter of debate, and I think that the debate is not closed, and we should really strongly consider that STD may promote resistance, and we should probably not apply uniformly STD to any patients to try to prevent ventilator-associated pneumonia. So actually, to prevent ventilator-associated pneumonia, we have other possibilities. One natural thing is to try to put disinfection in the oropharyngeal area, and this has been performed with several types of different disinfectant. Here you have a cleansing solution with diluted povodine iodine, and gargle with this solution were shown to be able to degrade the colonization you see here with P. aeruginosa, with MRSA, with Candida, or with gram-negative rods. And here these meta-analyses showed and suggest that oral decontamination with disinfectant solution may decrease the rates of ventilator-associated pneumonia. One problem is that you should be very careful with the choice of the disinfecting solution, because some of them may actually be responsible for lesion of the mucosa. And I think that it could be very difficult to choose a good disinfectant. Another concept has been to try to provide continuous aspiration of the subglottic secretion, which are accumulating here, as we have seen when we have speak from pathophysiology of ventilator-associated pneumonia. And you see here in this study that with continuous drainage of the secretion above the curve, it was these investigators were able to decrease the rate of nosocomial pneumonia. And here in this small meta-analysis, you see that continued aspiration of this subglottic secretion decreased the risk of ventilator-associated pneumonia, had no impact on the mortality of the patient, but the size of the studies were relatively small. And he could even have an effect not only in all pneumonia, but also in the early onset pneumonia, so being patient being ventilated for less than 5 days. Further, specific oropharyngeal care may also have an impact on the rates of these ventilator-associated pneumonia. And here these investigators have performed a meta-analysis trying to show if closed succoning system versus open succoning system may have an impact, but unfortunately this author was not able to see in the meta-analysis here that the closed system may have an impact, and this could be because we are investigating different things for relatively short period of time or of a study. Maybe the open system may be responsible for less infection, but with time even the closed system may be colonized by microorganisms, and this is a matter of debate. Here you see that these investigators have tried to clean with mechanical test cleaner the mouth of the patient. Unfortunately, these authors did not succeed in trying to prevent that. Recently, investigators try to use endotracheal tubes coated with silver. And these investigators were able to show here in this study published in the JAMA that silver-coated tubes were able to prevent significantly the ventilator-associated pneumonia. And in a subgroup analysis of these patients here, these investigators showed that that some of these patients also did not develop VAP, and this group were protected from that. Among specific measures, positioning of the patient has been shown to have an impact, and in this pivotal study here, these investigators showed that patients in the supine position were protected, develop more pneumonia, and if you are able to put patients in semi-recumbent position, they will develop less pneumonia. Unfortunately, here Dutch investigator tried to reproduce these results and follow with an electronic device the angulation of the head of the bed. And you see that they compare these two strategies, so prescripting semi-recumbent position with no recommendation. And you see that during the first day, it was not possible to put the patient with an angle of 45 degrees, and that 30 degrees was the maximum that they were able to obtain, compared to 10 degrees in the group without intervention. And at the end, after 1 week, in the intervention group, the mean angle was 28 degrees compared with 10 degrees, and unfortunately, between these two groups, there were no statistical difference in the rate of ventilator-associated pneumonia. So, probably it's very difficult to try to obtain semi-recumbent position, but it's actually included in all guidelines. Rotational therapy has been shown to be able to decrease the rate of VAP without impact on the mortality, but the care of patients in continuous rotational beds are very difficult, and this technique is not actually widely used in ICU. Enteral nutrition. It has been shown that enteral nutrition has a protective effect against the development of ventilator-associated pneumonia, and investigators have tried to put feeding directly in the duodenum and have compared that with feeding in the gastric in the gastric. And you see that in this relatively small study, the patient fed through the gastric route developed more ventilator-associated pneumonia as those through the duodenal tube, and that this was associated with less vomiting. Very recently, U.S. investigators have shown that probiotic prophylaxis with the special strain of lactobacillus put twice daily in the oropharynx and in the gastric fluid protected the patient against the development of ventilator-associated pneumonia. But this is only preliminary result because many, many patients were excluded from the study. All patients with the problem of the gastrointestinal tract were excluded, and all patients with immunosuppression were also excluded from this study. You see that with a small number of patients, it was able to show that Lactobacillus rhamnosus as probiotic protects the patient against pneumonia. And interestingly, also the number of patients developing Clostridium difficile associated diarrhea was decreased. Recently, it has been suggested that non-invasive ventilation was able to decrease the rate of ventilator-associated pneumonia. And this is essentially due to the fact that we are able to avoid intubation of this patient, and this is the explanation for the decreasing rates of pneumonia in this patient. And you see, for example, in this study, in patients with chronic obstructive lung disease, that the rate of all nosocomial infection was decreased, not only the rate of pneumonia. This has also an impact on the proportion of patients that required antibiotic treatment. At in the end, patients put under non-invasive ventilation were protected from death. And this was also shown here in another study in patients with underlying immunocompromission. And this is why actually we do our best in many ICU to try to avoid mechanical ventilation and to try to treat respiratory failure with non-invasive ventilation. And last, to finish, an important recent approach has been to put together many of the measures we have spoken about during this conference to see that putting together all these measures in bundle were able to significantly decrease the rate of infection. And you see that since about 10 years now, many investigators reported that bundle targeted at VAMP prevention succeed effectively in the prevention of ventilator-associated pneumonia. And this is probably the key message of all these field and all these approach, is that by putting together many individual measures, yes, prone to be efficacious in preventing VAP, will work synergically. So to summarize my presentation, VAP is an important nosocomial infection in the ICU associated with an impact which is very important. Unfortunately, to try to treat this infection, we are supposed to give early broad-spectrum antibiotics to try to decrease the mortality of this patient. Unfortunately, this is responsible for an increasing selective pressure for resistant microorganisms. But we were able to recently demonstrate that de-escalation based on procalcitonin evaluation is efficient in reducing the antibiotic overexposure, and that at the end, all these measures, general measures including surveillance, isolation precaution, antibiotic control specific measures, put together in education in bundles, may succeed in the prevention of nosocomial pneumonia. So I thank you for your attention, and I will answer to your question that you may ask through email. Thank you for your attention.